This is Occupied Territory with Mike Fader, and check us out on Facebook. We're here every on Facebook. You just Google Occupied Territory and Facebook, and you will find our page, and please participate. We're on every Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern. Of course, we're available on podcasts after that. Last October, October 26th to be precise, a retired Navy commander and somebody who is now president of Veterans for Peace disrupted a super committee hearing and pointed out to them in very clear terms how they could fix everything without spending all their time and wasting all our time, and especially cutting things that that we all need, like Social Security and Medicare. And it was very clear. And that's Leah Bolger, and she's with us today. Hiya.
Hi.
Congratulations. I hear that they didn't put you in a clink.
Yes. I think the judge gave me a very light sentence, and I'm grateful for that. And in fact, I think he sympathized. He said, I sympathize with your criticism of the government and that it's not being responsive to the people. So I got a fairly mild sentence, and I'm pleased with that.
So this is October 26th, and everybody knows what the super committee is. It was appointed by President Obama, a bunch of rich people, to decide how to fix the budget, and they had all kinds of ways to do it, a lot of which had to do with they were trying to be fair and balanced, to use a certain phrase. They were going to cut things that most people needed to survive and put a tiny little dent maybe in the military and, God forbid, not really tax anybody who is rich, because that's against some American principles. Now, you stood up in the committee hearing, right, and you walked to the front, and what did you say to them?
Well, yes, I did. I saw an opportunity to actually stand up and speak to these people who are making these policy decisions about our government, our tax money. And so I walked to the front, and I said that, you know, all the that they were talking about had nothing to do with the will of the people. We have been saying for years that we support raising taxes on the ultra rich, and we've been saying for years that we want to reduce the amount of money that we're spending on the war machine. And if we would just do those two things, tax the rich and end the wars, we could reduce the deficit completely, and we can pay for everything that we really want. Health care, jobs, education, housing, clean air, all those things. We have plenty of money in this country. It's just a matter of our values and priorities.
Now, this is something that everybody with common sense, every regular person understands, and in fact, poll after poll of the majority of Americans agree with this. So clearly, you're standing up in front of a bunch of people trying to remind them that they actually represent the people of the United States and not their own interests, right? So what law actually did you allegedly break?
Right. Well, you know, that's right. If Congress was doing their job and actually representing the will of the people, I wouldn't have to break a law to
right.
be heard, but that's the way it is now. You have to break a law in order to, or you have to have a pile of money. And I didn't have a pile of money like the lobbyists had. So the law that I broke is called Unlawful Conduct Disruption of Congress.
And I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, you know, and I think it is ironic. I looked up the definition for disruption. And there's actually, my dictionary had two definitions, and one was to interrupt or, you know, suspend something, which is what I did.
Mm-hmm.
But the other definition said to alter or change drastically, and that's what I wish I could do. I wish that we could change the status quo with a 52-second interruption of Congress.
It's going to
take a lot more.
There's a YouTube video of you doing this, right? Correct?
Right, yeah,
yeah. And you know what? That second definition of disrupting things, alter or change even drastically, is something that they're actually doing to the rest of us, right? I mean...
Right.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously...
Right.
Yeah.
No, they, you know, that's the thing, that Congress is not, and it's not just Congress, but all of our government, is the problems are so intertwined, the corporate... influence and the war machine and the disparity between the rich and the poor and being elected and all these things, it all boils down to money. and that money is calling the shots. And we have to, I think what Occupy needs to do is understand that it's not just a matter of the disparity between the rich and the poor, which is actually a huge problem, but how did we get to this point? Mm-hmm. And how did we get to this point that our government is completely ignoring our needs and wants and our demands? How is it that they can have the power to do that and stay in and keep things going that way? We have to take it back. We have to overhaul everything.
Yeah, and I really think that without people like you and without the Occupy movement, we're going nowhere, because voting is something they expect us to do once a year. It's almost sort of like letting a horse out of a stable once a year to have a little run, you know, so it enjoys itself.
Uh-huh.
But it really doesn't mean... I mean, I don't want to say it doesn't mean anything anymore, but we're pretty close to the fact it doesn't mean anything, because we have a choice of two parties controlled by the corporation and essentially the military. So if people are going to have to actually participate in civil disobedience and nonviolent civil disobedience, I'm thinking of Frederick Douglass's famous comment, you know, power concedes nothing without a demand, and demand sometimes has to be in their face. So I really, you know, I admire so much what you did. I don't know how many people would have the courage to do that. You were in the Navy for what, 20 years?
I was in the Navy for 20 years. And, you know, I joined the military in 1980 at the height of the Cold War. We weren't in a shooting war. And to me, the military was a job. I needed a job. And that's really why most people join the military, because they need a job, or they want the money so they can go to college. And you won't find very many people who have money to go to college that are joining the military.
Right.
That just doesn't happen. So, I joined and I stuck around. I was, it paid fairly well. I was an officer and, it was interesting. I traveled all over the world and I didn't have to make any kind of moral decisions about, I never had to choose about could I point a weapon, at somebody or how would I feel if a weapon were pointed at me. I was never in danger and I never had to, be in that kind of situation. So it was simply a matter of just staying in and doing a job that seemed fairly benign at the time. And now I'm a lot smarter.
Well, why did you retire?
Well, I retired because I retired at the minimum age and time in service to be eligible for benefits, and so now I'm able to live off my military pension and be a full time peace activist, I enjoy telling people that.
Well, so you're the president of Veterans for Peace, and this is a national organization, right?
It is. The Veterans for Peace was founded in 1985 by a Vietnam veteran who was trying to make create an organization that would bridge the communities, the peace community, and Vietnam veterans, and that was the intent. And since then, we have grown to we have chapters all over the country, and we're starting to form chapters in some other countries. UK has just started a chapter.
For disrupting the government, which has been disrupting all of our lives for a long time now, the maximum penalty could have been 6 months in jail and a $750 fine. So exactly what did Judge Nash in the District of Columbia sentence you to?
Well, he sentenced me to an assessment, they call, or it's a donation to the Victims of Violent Crime Fund of $50. Mm-hmm. An assessment to this fund is made to every person who appears in court if they're found guilty, and $50 is the minimum amount. I told the judge that I didn't intend to pay a fine because I felt like I shouldn't have to. Nobody should have to pay to have the ear of Congress. Like the lobbyists, have access because they pay.
Right.
And he listened to that. He did not assess any fine, even though the government asked for one. The government also asked for a stay away order from all of Capitol Hill, and the judge denied that. He said he thinks it's important for me to have access to government.
Good for
and
him.
To continue my activism. Yes. And he also sentenced me to 20 hours of community service. I also told the judge in my statement that I I would ask that he not give me community service as a punishment, because I feel that the volunteer work that I do, the full-time activism that I do as the president of Veterans for Peace, that I do not get paid for, is a community service. Mm-hmm. But I felt like, I think the judge had to, he felt like he had to impose some sentence.
Right.
And in fact, I think 20 hours is fairly minimal for this kind of infraction.
Well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, so the rest of the sentence was 9 months of probation and 60 days incarceration suspended. So the big burden, I guess, right now of this punishment for me would be to make sure that I'm not arrested in the next 9 months, or I will, you know, I will likely do jail time.
So but there's the NATO. The NATO meeting coming up in May in Chicago. What would you do about that?
Well, I will be in Chicago. I have already have a plane ticket, and I will be there. Veteran Peace plans to deliver a letter to the NATO leadership from our organization, and I will be helping to deliver that letter. I don't seek arrest. I hope that we are not arrested. I hope we're allowed to exercise our First Amendment rights to protest. But I'm also not going to shy away from that by staying at home. Mm-hmm. I think it's very important to continue to speak out and to represent the organization that I belong to.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that I think that's what the system tries to intimidate you and tries to keep you quiet by threatening jail time or arresting you for speaking out or standing in a certain place. And they're trying to silence you. So I will speak when I feel that it's important to speak. And if I am arrested again, I'll deal with the consequences.
It's interesting that the judge clearly sympathized with your point of view. I mean, much has said so a couple of times. And it's interesting what he said. He said that 300 million people cannot all come and interrupt a congressional hearing. And like you said, they wouldn't have to if they were doing their jobs, mm-hmm. right? That's the point.
Yes, exactly. And that's exactly why I did it, because if Congress were doing its job, we wouldn't have to commit an act of civil disobedience to be heard. And so I wanted to kind of debate when he said that. Mm-hmm. But, of course, I wasn't allowed to rebut what he said. But, you know, I understand his position, too, that he is supposed to, you know, pass, well, he's supposed to judge. And because, you know, I pled guilty, he has to say something about what I did. So, you know, I think he went out of his way to let me know that he was sympathetic, you know, by not giving me the stay away, by not imposing a fine, mm-hmm. And by actually saying I'm sympathetic to your criticism of the government.
You spoke to a probation officer, right?
Yeah. Yes, I was just there. I was just at the probation officer's office.
And they laid out the rules for you and everything?
Well, because the sentence, it requires supervised probation until the time that I have met the requirements of the sentence, which was the payment to the Victims of Violent Crime Fund and the 20 hours of community service.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I paid the $50 assessment before I left the courthouse, and I have a meeting with my probation officer next week, next Wednesday, and I will be providing him documentation of the 20 hours of community service, which I will complete between now and then, doing my work for Veterans for Peace.
So also, the 20 hours of community service can be as president of Veterans for Peace?
Well, the way I understand it is that the community service has to be done for a bona fide nonprofit organization, which Veterans for Peace is, a 501c3 nonprofit. We are a recognized NGO by the UN, and I understand. I told the probation officer that, and he said, "Absolutely, that's fine." So I will continue to do my work, and I, you know, it's like a formality that we have to submit a piece of paper that says that I did 20 hours, And I think the judge knew that, too.
Well, I know he must be swamped and overwhelmed with, like, feelings and meetings and interviews. So, I you know, I'll let you go. But I want to say I'm proud to know you. You know, I'm glad people are doing this kind of stuff. We did stuff like this in the 60s, paid the price for it. It seems to me, and knowing a little bit about American history, whenever people turn out, finally people have to turn out in the street. They actually have to break certain laws for people to pay attention. Otherwise, nothing ever happens, you know.
Right. Right, I agree, and I think, you know, if I had stood outside the Hart Senate building with a sign, or if I'd written a letter to my congressman, then, you know, I wouldn't be on your show right now, and I wouldn't have gone to court, and no talk about the super committee would have happened. I mean, we all would have just said, oh, yeah, it was terrible. You know, in Congress, other Congress members had a strong criticism of the super committee because they weren't allowed access to it. It was roundly criticized by everyone, but it takes an act like you know, this crime that I did to get anybody to talk about it and pay attention to it. So that's why I'm hoping that by talking to you and other people will forward the video and tweet about it and talk about it, and that we can create a discussion and some activism that comes out of this. And that's why I pled guilty to it. So right. Try to make the protest continue.
All right,
keep it going.
All right. Listen, we're the signal is going into outer space, but I really appreciate it. Thanks for coming on.
It was my pleasure.
Yeah. Well, great. Thank you very much. That was retired Naval Commander Leah Bulger, and she's also the president of Veterans for Peace. And we have here, I think we have a clip, don't we, of what this is what she did. The super committee was meeting. These are people, a bunch of rich people and, you know, inside Capitol Hill, you know, usual suspects were appointed by President Obama, you know, in an effort at bipartisanship, whatever that means to him, to come up with a solution to the budget that would please everybody. And of course, their solution to the budget was, you know, to make this false equivalency that everybody has to suffer some, right? As if all of us aren't suffering and the rich people not suffering at all and the military not suffering at all. So based on this false equivalency, they came up with a budget that would raise the age when you could get Social Security, that would cut out certain Medicaid and Medicare things, that would do all sorts of other things to hurt people who are already hurting, not put any burden on the rich at all, which is where we need to get our money from, and put a tiny dent in the military, which is nothing but a joke. So this super committee is nothing but a joke. And it's too much, finally. It's too much if you're a real American with actually American blood running in your veins. This woman stood up in the Senate and told them, tax the rich, cut the military spending, and we can pay for everything else. And it's true. We can. It's not just words. You can check out any kind of budget, and there's a budget I'll tell you about in a little bit that's that they came up with, and it can be done. Anybody knows it can be done. Why don't we play the clip? All right.
I yield back, Madam Chair.
The American people want to the committee will
that's how
order,
we
please.
Fix the deficit. And all this obfuscation with percentages of GDP, this is just trying to confuse the issue.
The chair wishes to remind all of our guests
of the public
that
wants you to tax the rich in the war. We spend more on
I would request that the Capitol Police restore order.
And this history of this vast, grotesque spending on wars and the war machine.
The committee shall recess until we are in order.
The base of this economy. We would have enough money for housing and health care and everything that we want if we stopped spending our money in this black hole of the military machine. It's very obvious. They speak of 99% in the war to tax the rich.
At this moment, what you heard was that the reason the audio is bad on that is because she walked into the middle of a Senate hearing where the president's budget director, you know, a little toy budget director, Douglas Elmendorf, was sitting there with his expensive suit on, probably just recently having come from some meeting with a bunch of lawyers and corporation presidents, you know, to work things out. And he was going to explain to the committee how it was that we would cut, you know, Social Security or raise the retirement age. We put a little dent in the military. The same usual nonsense that screws the rest of us all the time from these people. And so she walked up in front of him and started talking. And there was no, she didn't have a microphone, right, pinned to her. There was not a microphone in front of her, so that's why it sounded that way. And at the end, when you heard her fade away, when she was saying that you need to tax the rich and we need to stop this, she was actually being arrested and being dragged out, which is why the audio faded away. And we have a clip of the audio, don't we? I think we have a clip. No, I think we have the actual audio is what I mean, and the video is what I'm saying. We have the video on Occupied Territory. Okay, on the Facebook page, go to Occupied Territory on Facebook, and you will see the video of this woman doing this. And you'll see a woman who is a real American hero. Not, you know, they use the word hero all the time for people, you know, who did something or other out in Afghanistan or the Navy SEALs or somebody who scored 30 points at a big basketball game. That's not a hero. Those are not heroes. She is a real American hero. She did something that most of us wouldn't have the nerve to do. She risked certain arrest, and she was arrested. She could have been in jail. And you want to see somebody, a hero, an American hero in action. Watch Leah Bulger, and just go to the Occupied Territory Facebook page, and you'll see that. And any comments you want to make, that would be fine. She made a statement to the judge at her sentencing, and she said, "I have come to understand what millions of Americans already know, that the actual majority will of the people is of little concern to those in power. We can demonstrate and we can petition and we can write letters until we're blue in the face, but those actions are virtually worthless as we can't compete. Our voice is drowned out by the power of the money coming from the lobbyists and corporate interests. Money equals speech." This is what she said to the judge, and the judge completely sympathized with her, as do most American people. And this once again reiterates the point that there are polls all the time. There have been polls for many years now, recent polls. 60-70% of the people in the United States, the voters, the citizens, the saps, which is how the corporate leadership and the government looks at people like you and me, don't want this war. We don't want all these military bases. We don't want to spend all this money on weapons. We don't want this. And they ignore us. And they go and take our money and they murder people with it. And they ignore us. And 60 to 70% of the people in the United States, something over 70% in some polls, want Medicaid for all. They want Medicare for all. They want single payer. And they ignore us. Bottom line is, our representatives don't represent us anymore. Clear as a bell, they represent rich people, they represent themselves, and that's it. So what's left is, in this equation, the clear deduction, you know, from all of this, is that we are going to have to get in their faces, that people are going to have to get arrested, that tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of people over and over and over again are going to have to protest, are going to have to commit civil disobedience, just like in the civil rights movement, just like in the anti-war movement, just like many times, many generations before, going all the way back to the beginning of American history. Frederick Douglass said, "Power concedes nothing without a demand, and sometimes you have to take a moral and a physical risk." And that's what we're going to have to do. Voting is not going to do it anymore. So this is Leah Bulger. It's LeahBulger. You can check her out on the net. I'm sure she's going to show up on radio shows and TV shows today, tomorrow, and you'll see her and you'll hear what she has to say. She's a decent woman, obviously. She's a brave woman, and we could all only aspire to be like her. We are going to try, after a little break here, to get in touch with somebody else who is a victim of the same old kind of corporate fascism that goes on in this country. And that's somebody who is a member of a small community of people who live in a trailer park out in Pennsylvania who are being evicted from their land by a water company that wants to draw 3 million gallons. This seems like an impossible figure, but it's true. 3 million gallons of water a day out of the Susquehanna River to provide water for fracking on the Marcellus Shale, where they are poisoning streams, poisoning rivers, poisoning people, poisoning animals, and destroying the land so rich people can get rich. And we're going to try to have this guest on, kind of contact this guest after our break. We'll take a little break right now. We'll be right back.
but now you got to crawl.
Okay, we're back here. We're going to try to get in touch with our guest, but it's a little tricky right now because they are evicting people from where he lives. The story here is that there's a community, the Riverdale Mobile Home Park in Pennsylvania, a town in Pennsylvania, which is right smack next to or on top of the Marcellus Shale. And you're familiar with Marcellus Shale, which is this huge rock formation that goes wide and deep all the way across Pennsylvania. I think it may even be a tip of it in Ohio, but it goes across Pennsylvania and a large part in New York State, where people are fighting against this constantly. It's got an estimated something like 3 trillion cubic feet of natural gas. And this is going to make us independent. It's going to make us independent from the Arab states, which, of course, it won't. But, you know, anyhow, here's the natural gas. This is the thing that the Republicans want us to tap into all the time. Now, many of you probably have seen documentaries on this or you've seen testimony on this. The hydrofracking, if you're familiar with it, and, you know, it's a complicated thing to get into, but it's just simply a way that large oil and gas companies, you know, who are concentrating in this, have a way of going deep down into the strata under, you know, the under the earth in any local area. And this is happening out west. It's happening all over the country. In Texas, it's happening. In Wyoming, in various other states out west. But one of the largest concentrations, if not the largest concentration of this stuff, is the Marcellus Shale Formation, basically in Pennsylvania and New York. And they're already been, they've been doing this for a couple of years now in Pennsylvania. There are tremendous documentaries on this. And they have already poisoned whole streams. They have poisoned rivers. They have killed animals. People are turning on their water taps in various places because of all this drilling. What happens is when they drill down, they use a tremendous amount of water. One of the ways, the main way they have of drilling down into the earth and fracturing this shale, which is very hard rock, is they drill down at very high pressure. They inject water into it. And this water is mixed in with the worst chemicals known to human beings. Formaldehyde, start with formaldehyde, which causes cancer. Think of 20 things like benzoates and whatever other bad drugs, whatever bad chemicals, anything that causes cancer, causes brain damage. Every chemical that is forbidden use in any kind of food or packaging or anything that has to do that is exposed to the public, it goes right into this water. And they use hundreds of millions of gallons of water, every day, fracturing these formations under the earth, hundreds of millions of gallons. And where does this poisoned, literally the worst sort of poisonous water go? Anywhere it wants, into the water table, into neighboring land, into people's wells, into streams, into rivers. And of course, they don't care. And the government is not doing a damn thing about it. Local departments of environmental preservation are being bought off by these people. They're rolling over and kicking their legs like little poodles for these people. The federal government isn't doing a damn thing about it. Why? Because we're going to be independent. We're going to have lots of natural gas and lots of energy, which we're all going to pay far too much for, which is going to poison us all and is poisoning us all. And it's going to make a lot of money for the usual people it makes money for. That's what's going on. That's what hydrofracking is all about. And they're doing this, and they're not, there's no control over them. And they're using tons of money to buy up people's, they're leasing people's mineral rights on their land. They're buying up land. They're buying up the rights to use water from public rivers. And local places are meeting, and they're just giving them this right. Local committees, local mayoralties, local councils, town councils are meeting all the time, and they wind up voting for this. And no one can even keep track of this. There's so much money and so much activity that sooner or later, if they ever put any district attorney on them or any federal attorneys on them, you're going to see hundreds of indictments for bribery. But we haven't seen. Our guest is on the line. We haven't seen this yet. So what they're doing in this particular case is in this town called Riverdale, It's a mobile home park, and it's called Riverdale Mobile Home Park in Pennsylvania. And we have a man on the phone. They're evicting people. The landlord sold the land to a water company, and they're evicting people, just throwing them off their land where they've lived for a long time in trailers. And they got to get lost. Nobody really much cares about what happens to them. And this is all, to make money. And we have on the line Kevin June. Hi, Kevin. You there?
Yes, I am.
Kevin, you're a retired firefighter, right?
I'm a retired firefighter, and I have 35 years in the auto body business. And I'm disabled right now from a serious car accident about 5 years ago. But I've taken the leadership over our park to try to lead everybody in the right direction.
Well, let's get the details of what happened here. The name of the place is the Riverdale Mobile Home Park, where you live. You and what is it? 37 other families live in trailers.
Right. It was approximately 37 mobile homes that were in this park. And
what town? What town is it? Where are you?
We're in Jersey Shore, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
We're 15 minutes west of Williamsport.
Okay.
So it's central Pennsylvania is where we're at. And we actually found out by reading an article in the Williamsport Sun Gazette that our park was sold.
Oh, really? Yeah. The landlord didn't tell you. You found out by reading the newspaper. That's great.
Yeah, we found out by reading in the local newspaper, which is illegal right there. I mean, number one. And then it was about 2 days later, the previous landlord came around and gave us just a real short letter stating that the mobile home park was sold and that all of us would have to move.
And what is the date that they've given you to move?
June 1st is the final date. Then from what we understand, then they're going to start eviction processes on us.
And you all had leases, right? Did you have leases on the land?
A lot of us did, but he terminated everybody's lease immediately.
Well, but lease is a contract, right? I mean, so you sign the lease and, you give him money, and what is he supposed to give you?
Well, I mean, we should have, from what I understand, he should have offered us, all the residents of the mobile home park, the first purchase.
Mm-hmm.
But he did, from what I understand, there's so many dirty hands, like I heard you talking about before, that everybody's just out for the money and they don't care about the residents.
What local group was it that voted to allow this company that's taking over the land?
It's called the Susquehanna River Basin Commission.
And they voted to allow this water company to take over the land to draw water out of the river?
Yep.
Why would they do a thing like that?
Well, because their point is that they want to take the water tankers off the highway. There are so many water tankers that are, shuttling the water from the river to the drill site. And what they're saying, once they get this pump station in, it's going to pump 3 million gallons a day right directly to the water, to the gas sites. That'll eliminate 1,000 trucks off the highway.
Well, the trucks really are a problem because the trucks are extremely heavy. And they break highways, they interfere with traffic, and they create a tremendous amount of pollution. So I suppose you could say that's a good thing to do. But the larger picture is they're just participating in getting rid of people's property and a place for them to live. And they're continuing with the fracking, I guess. I guess they don't really much care what happens to the land and the water, right?
Well, no, they don't. And right now, for one thing, that we this past winter, we had no snow,
mm-hmm.
To melt off into the mountains, into the streams, into the tributaries, into the river. So right now, we're already in the beginning of a drought. So, here they're going to put in this multi-million-dollar water withdrawal system, and if we don't have a rainy April or May, they won't legally be even allowed to draw water.
Well, I guess they're just assuming they're going to draw as much water as they can while they can, and it doesn't make any difference much to them if there is a drought. I mean, we have the same thing in New York State. Our reservoirs are way down. In New York City, we're probably eventually going to get a warning in another month or two about water usage because of the lack of rain and snow this winter.
Right.
It's the same thing all over the Northeast here or the Middle Atlantic. So what did they offer you? They must have offered you some money to move, didn't they?
Well, they offered everybody $2,500.
That's a joke.
It is a joke because, number one, the lowest price that I have heard so far is $6,100 and up to over $11,000 because of your porches and your sheds and everything that has to be moved. But your home has to be approximately a 2003, 2004 or newer to even be accepted into another mobile home park.
So these trailers have to be, they have to date, they have to be new enough, they have to date after 2003, 2004.
And right.
Do any of the trailers in your trailer park meet that requirement?
There's probably about, I'm going to say like 10 to 15. Some of them are moving. Some of them already have moved.
Mm-hmm.
But they're doing this out of, you know, they're taking their retirement funds or 401ks and cashing them in because they're so, you know, a lot of people are so scared to death that, you know, well, what's going to happen if they serve eviction papers on us and we don't have a place to go? Well, that's what a lot of us are waiting for.
Mm-hmm.
We want the eviction notice.
You must have a lawyer representing you.
Yeah.
Well, what can you give me an idea of? Like, aside from you're in one of the trailers. So who else? Like, give me an idea of some other people that live there.
Well, two couples that I will. The one lady is her name is Mrs. Frabel. Mm-hmm. She's lived here for 38 years, and she had to move into a tiny little efficiency apartment. But thank God that her family was able to help her.
How old is she?
She is 83 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And has, you know, like I said, lived here for 38 years. Then there's another couple by the name of Bill and Betty Wine. They moved in here in 1972, right after the Agnes flood. And they've been here ever since. He's on kidney dialysis. He's on therapy. His wife has breast cancer.
And how old are they?
He is 78 and she is 82.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they, you know, they have a handicap ramp to get in and out of their home. You just feel so bad for these residents. And then today I received an email from a woman stating that she's doing articles on the physical, mental health that all this is doing to the communities that are being affected.
Mm-hmm.
When you see and feel the pain in everybody's eyes and how they're talking, and if you've seen our videos on YouTube, you can just sense the pain that's in this park.
Is there a simple way to describe how people can, what should they do on YouTube to see what's going on here?
It's very easy to find our videos. All you got to do is type in the residents of Riverdale, Riverdale mobile home community.
Okay, the residents of Riverdale mobile home community, and that will
get
you the video of what's going on.
First two videos are from our mobile home park. The one was done by a man named Scott Cannon. It's a 15-minute long video, very, very powerful. And then the second one is only 7 minutes long, and that was one that was shot 2 weeks ago when we held a town meeting here.
Okay, I'll tell the audience here, if you're just tuning in here, this is Kevin June, who is a retired firefighter, and he's a member of a community, the Riverdale Mobile Home Park in Jersey Shore, Pennsylvania, and they are being evicted, June 1st being the final eviction date, by their landlord, thrown out because a pumping station, a very expensive pumping station, is going to be built, and the land was bought for this purpose to help the fracking industry in the natural gas industry in Pennsylvania. And these people are going to be tossed out of their homes. They've been living there for decades, some of these people. And the way that you can we're going to probably post a link to this video on the Occupied Facebook, Occupied Territory Facebook page. So go to Occupied Territory and Facebook. If we don't have it on right now or soon, we'll have it on later today. Occupied Territory and Facebook, and you'll see a video about what Kevin and the other residents are going through. So what legal moves have you made or are you going to make?
Well, the ones that are going to stick around, we're waiting for Aqua America to come and give us some answers. We've absolutely had no paperwork, no mailings, no phone calls, no nothing from Aqua America. But now next week on the 18th, there is a big rally protest in Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania, at Aqua America's main headquarters.
Aqua America is the name of the pumping company, I guess.
Right. Okay. And I am going to be one of the ones from our community designated to go inside the building and talk with the executives to try to find out what, you know, what their plan is, because we aren't going. You know, we're not moving. You know, they're going to have to proceed with eviction processes and
if people wanted to continue to donate to a legal fund or to help anybody out there, I presume also there's a link or a place where people can go to donate.
Right. I have it's set up at my local bank. It's Sovereign Bank, 222 Allegheny Street in Jersey Shore, Pennsylvania, 17740. And the check starts to be made out in my name, Kevin June, and care of Riverdale Fund.
Okay, we'll have to, since people can't catch that on the radio here, we're going to have to put some kind of a website link on it where people can go, and either we'll put that on later. I'll you know, get in touch with you, and you'll give me a place where people can go to figure that out, I'll give people your email one way or the other. In fact,
post my email. You could even post my phone number. I am more than willing to talk to anybody.
Okay.
We're trying to get the word out, far and wide.
We'll do that.
And
we'll do
if anybody, this Saturday at 1 o'clock, we're having another town meeting. And, if anybody wants to come and support us, you're more than welcome.
All right.
It's just, punch in 25 Hannah Lane, Jersey Shore, Pennsylvania, on your GPS, and it'll bring you right to our park.
Okay, Kevin June, that's J-U-N-E, and
yep.
This is the Riverdale Mobile Home Park in Jersey Shore, Pennsylvania, another series of victims of the greed and craziness of American corporations. So good luck, Kevin, and we'll post all the links and the telephone numbers on the Facebook page that we have, and we'll hope people help you out. Thanks for coming.
Send me your link to your Facebook page so that I have that.
Sure.
Also.
I will do that. I will absolutely do that in a little while. Okay.
Thank you very much for listening to me, and everybody keep us in your prayers.
Okay. Thank you. All right. This is Occupied Territory with Mike Fader. We're here every Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern. And, of course, we're available on podcasts. And again, check out our Facebook page. Just Google Occupied Territory and Facebook. And a lot of this information will be there. If you have any comments, in fact, right now, if you wanted to call up, actually, I don't see our phone number here. The phone number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. 4888. If you want to call up right now about anything you heard in the last hour, and we welcome your phone calls as always. Meanwhile, as things proceed apace. And you can see how it's going, though. Every one of these things that we talk about here on this show, every subject, every interview like this, it's all related. It's all the same thing. We're all in the same boat. And this boat has been shoved off the shore of America by the rich. And most of the population of America is on this boat, and it's sinking, and they couldn't care less. Our rights don't mean anything. Our votes don't mean anything. Clearly, as Occupy, and this show is called Occupy Territories, the Occupy movement has shown in one way or another, we're going to have to, through one venue or another, either through an Occupy group, through union movements, through some other movement that hasn't even developed yet, through some national organization that gets it together, one way or another, we're all going to have to turn out in great numbers, no matter what surveillance, no matter what militarized police, no matter what biometrics they have. It doesn't matter anymore. It doesn't matter anymore. There's nothing for us to lose. Nothing for us to lose. What was it that Marx said, was it? Was it Marx or Lenin? I don't know. Workers of the world unite. You have nothing to lose but your chains. Well, it's come down to that here in this country. We should just all unite and get out there and get in their faces. We have nothing to lose anymore. Because while we vote and while we click on our little, you know, petitions, which is fine, the petitions do work. So I'm not going to denigrate that as much as I used to. Petitions do change things. Vast social media movements get corporations scared because they're worried about their bottom line. And they get foundations to do the right thing. They even sometimes get politicians and representatives, amazingly, to do the right things because they're afraid of the votes that go behind these clicks. So that's okay. But if we don't get out on the street, in addition to that, it's not going to make any difference. We cannot just sit home and text something or click something. As good as that is, as much as that works, we can't just do that. So if we don't have any calls, I'm going to move on to a couple of and so just to sum up again, this is all the same thing. This is all the same thing. We're in the same boat. All these articles, all these interviews, all these commentaries I make, everything that's on our Facebook page, all the videos, it's all about the same thing. They have stolen the country. They owned most of it to begin with, and there were always the same suspects, although the names changed over the generations and over the centuries. But they have actually now stolen the whole country. Our representatives are not our representatives. Our government is not our government. It's been stolen, and we have to take it back. And that's what we have to do. Now, you may want to just keep up to date on, you know, I know some of you, you know, are making out your taxes now. I think it's taxes have to be paid. Is it the 15th or the 16th? I forget. Or did they change the date? But it's next week. Taxes are due. And we want to keep you up to date on what other people are doing about I don't know how much you made last year, what their taxes were. Now, we're going to have a guy running for president. I don't know about forget about Obama. So we got Romney's going to be the guy running for president on the other side. Right. Makes he's made two. He has assets of, with pay that's owed him and money he already has and stocks and bonds and houses he owns, of $250 million. This is the guy running for president for Republicans. Well, that's perfect for them, right? Now, I bet $250 million. I'm going to bet everything that's in my pocket, maybe it's about a nickel, that you didn't make $250 million a year last year. I made almost as much because that's what I get paid here at PRN, but I bet most of you didn't make that much, right? So, but some people made a little bit more than that. And here's something from a place called Too Much. It's this great place I subscribe to. It's just called Too Much. Early every spring, major media outlets start releasing annual reports on America's biggest income earners, and USA Today has just helped kick off this year's data surge. Our most typical big-time CEOs, say the paper, saw their take-home pay rise 12% to $7.8 million in 2011. That's an average, $7.8 million of CEOs of large companies. CEO pay for the year actually may have risen quite a bit more. USA Today's numbers only cover early corporate pay report filers. They don't include paychecks like the $53.2 million that went to JCPenney CEO Ron Johnson. I wonder how much the workers make at JCPenney, hourly wage. That paycheck came available last Wednesday. Ron Johnson took home in 2011 over 3,000 times the annual pay. Let's hear that again. Over 3,000 times the annual pay of a starting JCPenney sales clerk. But we learned last week he has cause to feel underpaid. Last year's top-earning hedge fund manager, a Financial Trade Journal reported yesterday, pulled in $3.9 billion. $3.9 billion, $1 billion being $1,000 million. And that's 73 times what Mr. Johnson made. This is the country we live in. This is the country we live in. There are thousands of people in this country who have hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars. What we need to do is take it away from them. We need to take that money away from these people. They don't have a right to have this much money. And we need to spread it. We need to spread it out among people who don't have enough money. And one way or another, our government has to do this. And if our representatives and our government won't help take this money away from them in huge tax increases or some other penalties or fines or some other rules or laws, then we've got to force them to do this somehow. We've got to make them do this. This cannot go on. We can't have a democratic country that even we can't have anything that even resembles a democratic country if we have such inequality. It just doesn't work. It's not working now, and it will continue not to work. Let's see what else we can tell you. Here, as far as corporations paying taxes, if you have a couple of quarters in your pockets, like nickels and pennies, if that's what most people have in their pockets, if you have, let's say, a couple of quarters and some pennies, you're holding more money than GE paid in taxes over the last 4 years. It seems impossible, but it's true. Despite making $19.6 billion between 2008 and 2011, that's profit, $19.6 billion in profit between 2008 and 2011, GE paid negative $3.7 billion in federal taxes. One way or another, they managed to bribe enough congressmen and senators and presidents so that they got enough paybacks and enough loopholes that the government of the United States, i.e. we, me and you, owes GE, though they made $20 billion in profit. We owe them $3.7 billion. Now, how did that happen, do you think? That's right. The rest of us taxpayers handed billions of dollars of our money to GE, and all the while they continue to send thousands of good jobs overseas. GE is among the worst offenders, but they're not alone. Boeing has paid negative $812 million since 2008, and everyone's favorite electricity company, Con Ed, paid negative $525 million over 4 years. What did you pay in taxes this year? A lot more than that, I bet. That's not how it's supposed to work. So on tax day, April 17th, people are going to gather in Bryant Park. This is for New Yorkers. People are going to gather in Bryant Park. That's on 42nd Street between 5th and 6th Avenue, and it's right behind the library. And people are going to gather in Bryant Park for a rally to demand the biggest corporations pay their fair share. So GE and Boeing and also Verizon, which is stripping health care and retirement benefits for its unionized workers, and they haven't paid any taxes either. How long is this supposed to go on? How long do we let these people go on robbing us and laughing at us and making fools out of us and cutting all of our benefits and all of our pensions and our health insurance benefits and our salaries and freezing our salaries and laying people off and firing teachers and nurses and firemen and cops from all over the country? How long do we let them keep robbing us? If somebody carjacked your car, if somebody stuck a gun in your face on the street and took your wallet, it's no different than what these corporations are doing. And what they're doing is paying off. It's as if somebody was on your street, right, a gang that operated on your avenue or on street in your neighborhood, paid off the local cops all the way up to the precinct commander to let them rob you. These corporations are paying our president, paying the Supreme Court, paying Congress to let them rob you. They don't directly pay the Supreme Court because those geezers have lifetime appointments, but they pay everybody else in government to let them rob you. How long do we let this go on? I don't know. Good question. Check out our Occupied Territory Facebook page, and I will see you again on Monday with my other show, The Turning Point.